Church and State, Communion Fellowship, The Church Year, Baptism, Lutheranism. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August is a simple explanation series. It's a pack of 20 pamphlets with solid biblical guidance on various Christian topics. A simple explanation pamphlet is perfect for outreach programs, new member classes, and in the church pews. Learn more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. A simple explanation series.
You've got casinos operating at 50% capacity with hundreds of thousands of people going through them, and you've got these churches limited to 50 people. I think the proof is in the pudding.
Divorce is really just the kickoff of a lifetime of transition, loss, and instability for kids. And if you're a child of divorce, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Those who view science and faith as enemies understand neither.
Muhammad, he wants you to believe him on force. For Jesus, he does things to make you want to believe him.
Parents trying to attend a virtual conference with a toddler in the living room. Love Issues, etc.
Where it might be to create this Islamic world.
We used to hear a lot about the religious right. That's become what? White evangelicals. That's the new term for the religious right. Didn't hear as much about the religious left. Why not? And what is the religious left as opposed to religious right? It was assumed that, say, a Republican candidate for the presidency would have the vote of the religious right. Is the same true of a Democratic candidate for the presidency with respect to the religious left? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, August the 5th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about media coverage of the religious left. Terry Mattingly, founder and editor of Get Religion, will be our guest. Then we're going to spend the rest of the program with Pastor Will Whedon in our series, The Words of Scripture. The word is blessed today, and we'll deal with the Old Testament material on that word. Joining us to talk about media coverage of the religious left, Terry Mattingly, senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
First of all, from a journalist perspective, why is it religious left, capital R, capital L?
You mean like religious right? Capital R, capital R?
Yes.
Kind of being consistent? Well, first of all, this is kind of a vague area in the Bible of American journalism, which is the Associated Press Manual of Style. It kind of falls into several informal agreements. Nothing is like written down. I just looked it up in the style book by my desk. Religious right doesn't get its own entry, yet you'll hardly ever see religious right, and it's not capitalized. And you'll rarely or never see civil rights movement without it being capital C, capital R, capital M, civil rights movement. And why is that? I think the question is whether or not the press has decided that something is an organization or a formal movement. Does it have leaders? Does it have organizations? And to some degree, it's does the press, do the people in our newsrooms that matter the most, do they perceive a particular group of people as a movement in any formal sense? And to me, it's more interesting that that religious right is uppercase, because if you know anything about the religious right, you know, it's astonishingly diverse. And trying to say that the religious right has one set of leaders that really matters is ridiculous. But yet this leads to this syndrome of, okay, something really strange has happened. What did Pat Robertson say? I mean, well, why do they want to quote Pat Robertson? Often it's because Pat Robertson has said something that a high percentage of people in newsrooms think is absurd. And thus, when you quote Pat Robertson saying something absurd, you've made the followers of Pat Robertson look absurd. And then you say that he's one of the main leaders of the movement called the religious right. We're in transition right now. I mean, we're obviously Jerry Falwell Sr. was one of the people who would have claimed he was the leader of the moral majority. That immediately got uppercase M and uppercase M again on both cases. Moral majority was a movement from the get-go. And to some degree, it was a movement because Jerry Falwell said it was. I am the leader of the moral majority, and they formed an organization. The religious right has never been one group of people with one particular set of agendas in terms of policy or even religious beliefs. It's been, you know, a kind of grab bag coalition of some Orthodox Jews, quite a few weekly mass going Catholics. Nobody quite knew how to handle the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in there. You know, you've got Missouri Synod Lutherans, but we all know that Lutherans are just Lutherans, which means they must be the same as the ELCA Lutherans, which if they're not, then that means they're actually a part of the religious right. What do you do with the Southern Baptist? Well, there are good, here's a key word for our discussion, there are good moderate Southern Baptists, but then all those conservative Southern Baptists are actually in the religious right. So I'm answering your question about the religious right. The question to me is, again, why isn't religious left capitalized as a formal movement? And I have a number of reasons for that. I think the overarching one, however, is that to some degree, people in newsrooms don't think of the religious left as the left. They think of them as ordinary Christian leaders at ordinary churches in buildings in downtown near their newsroom. And since they're ordinary, they're not a movement. They're just, they are the normal Christians to a lot, not all, but a lot of people in newsrooms. I have so many stories I could tell about this. I know of stories where reporters that didn't understand the religion beat would do stories by walking out of their newsroom, look for steeples, and just go walk and talk to the ministers, and then think they've done some sort of survey of churches in their city. Well, anyone who knows major cities in America know that the downtown churches tend to be very old, very mainline, very established, and quite frankly, very rarely are they growing or alive. The more evangelical and conservative churches, even conservative churches within mainline denominations, tend to be out in the suburbs or whatever. So if you're going by the downtown churches are normal, you're actually taking a very small percentage of American churches and deciding that they're normal. I also remember a very interesting and poignant story. Years ago in Denver, an African-American priest in the Episcopal Church, we needed a photo to note that it was the start of Holy Week for the Western churches. And I put in a photo assignment to go over for the Mass for Palm Sunday at this very high church, African-American Episcopal congregation. And when I turned it in, I called the priest up and asked him if this would be okay if we sent a photographer to get some sort of feature picture during the service. And he was like, wait a minute, you want to come take a picture of me as a priest doing things that a priest does? I'm an African-American minister. You're only supposed to take pictures of me when I'm doing marches or leading politics or doing something else. Which brings up another point. He was joking, of course. He was being sarcastic, of course. But he was saying something very true. The press tends to think that progressive churches, what they do that's most important is politics. Which means to some degree we don't want to think about the religious left because it's like the newsroom people don't really think they're all that religious. They're normal and they're political, and we're not going to make them some sort of movement like those scary people from the religious right that are going to come in out of the woods and sack civilization as we know it.
Why do you say, why have you been saying for, well, the better part of two decades, that the media needs to pay more attention to the religious left?
Well, first of all, I think they need to pay more attention to the religious left as religious groups, because there are some very important stories related to the religious left, and they're not all just the battles over sexuality that occur almost every summer in mainline Protestant denominations, which, by the way, shows the degree to which you can't automatically assume that the liberal Protestant denominations are politically and culturally always liberal. Ryan Berg, the great man of demographics and statistics and political science, and he's a liberal progressive Baptist minister, part of the American Baptist, not the Southern Baptist. Ryan likes to point out that all of the mainline religious groups have been getting more conservative in recent decades, and that when people assume that the ELCA or the Presbyterian Church in America or the American Baptist or the Episcopal Church, when people assume that those churches are automatically liberal and thus a part of the religious left, they're actually thinking about the clergy and the denominational structures way more than they're thinking about the people in the pews who, to the shock of me, for Pete's sake, I was stunned that Donald Trump won a majority of the mainline Protestant votes in the pews. And there have been similar trends among mainline quote-unquote liberal churches for years. You've got to separate the pews from the pulpits and the bureaucracies, and you've got to focus on the people who are most active in these churches. What you end up with is the fact that the religious left is predominantly a phenomena of the urban versus flyover country and rural divide that we see in the rest of American life. That if you look at, say, the United Methodist Church, you find out that United Methodists in a college town or in a major city like Chicago are radically different than the United Methodist in rural sections of Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, and wherever else. So, why do we think they deserved more coverage? We actually think that if you go in and cover what's happening in the liberal and the mainline religious groups, and you focus on it as religion, you actually can begin to understand better some of the trends in those churches. And then one other, and this is one I've told you about before. I'm convinced that the decline of the religious left, beginning basically even pre-Roe v. Wade, and I'm talking about the statistical decline of those denominations, which depending on how you do the math, they've lost somewhere from 40 to 50, in some cases 60% of their members in the last 40 or so years. I'm convinced that the decline of the religious left as religious institutions producing converts, children, retaining members, producing clergy, the health of their seminaries. I'm convinced that the statistical decline of the religious groups in the mainline and liberal religious world, I'm convinced that that decline is exactly what also helped evangelicalism, which for a long period of time was growing, and now only some evangelical groups are growing, others are plateaued, but they're not in free fall the way the mainliners are. I think to some degree the decline of the mainline world, which is to some degree a part of the liberal religious left equation, the decline of that liberal mainline world is a part of what created the rise of the evangelicals. That to some degree the public square in all of our big cities, the public square that are the religious groups that our journalists tend to think of as normal, those religious groups' decline created space in public life for the evangelicals. The problem was evangelicals scare the living daylights out of most people in elite urban newsrooms, whereas the religious left, they're not strange at all. They're just normal. In fact, they're not even really left. And here comes one of those big words. They're not really liberals. They're moderates. And who wants to cover? I mean, we don't have a, you have religious left, we have a moderate, religious moderates. I mean, just lots of confusion among journalists on why they should be covering these people in the first place, except every 4 to 8 years, we get some sort of story about a refreshing revival on the religious left, and that almost always is attached to political campaigns that have some chance of upsetting a Republican candidate who's backed by the religious right. Surely you've noticed that, like every 4 to 8 years, like clockwork.
Who is David Briggs, and what has he observed on this subject recently?
Well, okay, well, Briggs is a Yale Divinity School grad, and David is best known for his years working for the Associated Press. And David is a very respected brand name on his own within the world of religion writing. If you've been active in the field, let's just say if, like me, you're a person of a certain age and you've been around the religion beat, you know who David Briggs is. Well, he now works for an organization that tracks a lot of data related to religion, and it says exactly that, the Association of Religion Data Archives. And he is on the staff there and is in charge of kind of like taking lots of religious information and putting it into forms that would help reporters, that would help social planners in cities, and a lot of other folks who need to know what's happening in the world of religion. Very knowledgeable guy. His own background, I would say, is on the religious left or among mainline Protestants. You don't get a whole lot of evangelicals out of Yale Divinity School. But he was a fine, fine reporter and well known as kind of an analyst of these things. So the fact that David Briggs recently wrote a column that basically just came right out and said, the religious left is in decline. It's not all that big a deal. It's never been that big a deal. And it's decline anyway, even in the age of Trump. I thought that was fascinating and that a lot of journalists would want to read about that. And also the fact that I had stashed a drawer full of charts from Ryan Berg that perfectly illustrate this Briggs piece. Just some of the catchphrases from these Berg tweets. The most active ideological group in American religion are very liberal. I mean, so the religious left, in this his article said, they're small but very loud. And they're loud in major cities, and they're loud backing the causes that journalists tend to back, which means they get tons of coverage. It's always amazed me how much more coverage, say, the Episcopal, and this, I'm including myself here, how the Episcopal Church gets so much coverage when you consider how small it is and how much in decline it is, compared to, say, coverage of the Assemblies of God, a large organization, or let alone the Church of God in Christ, the African-American Pentecostal denomination, which is probably the least covered group in American religion in terms of their numbers compared to the ink they get. Here's another thing that Ryan points out in another tweet that's right at the heart of what you're asking. I don't want to reignite the is the religious left a thing argument, but nearly half of all liberals today identify as nuns, religiously unaffiliated. Nuns have clearly been a larger proportion of liberals since 2016. Yet 3/4 of conservatives in American life are Christians. That's consistent. This gets us to something that you and I have talked about before. And that is the simple fact that the religious left, if you combine the religious left, however you define that, if you religious liberal organizations and religious progressives, whether they're Reform Jews, liberal Catholics, and we can get back to liberal Catholics in a second if you want to, all those people on the left, they seem to vote identically to atheists and agnostics and nuns. And when you combine atheist, agnostic, nuns, and what's left of the religious left of these declining liberal churches and organizations, you get a very significant voting block in American life. You've heard me say this so many times, you're probably bored of it by now. But they're now the largest identifiable religious-related block of voters in the modern Democratic Party. And that segment is growing. Yet here's something that makes the press uncomfortable with that. If you analyze ministries, especially urban ministries, if you analyze ministries that would be greatly hurt by an attempt to take away the tax-exempt status of conservative religious groups or other things related to putting religious liberty inside scare quote marks because it's something you're not sure needs to exist or that it really exists or it's not what the religious right says it is, a very high percentage of those groups that are going to be hurt are actually African-American ministries and Latino ministries, many of them linked to churches that are economically and politically progressive, but more socially and morally conservative. And I don't think many reporters want to delve into that divide, that very explosive divide inside the Democratic Party today. They did a little bit over the issue of whether Pete Buttigieg would do well with African-American voters in South Carolina. But that got swept away with the fact that if you're looking for the most single most important moment in American politics in the last 12 months, it would have to be when the black church saved Joe Biden's life as a presidential candidate. So how do you write about the religious left without noting that quite a few, the majority of the big black churches don't fit comfortably in the religious left if you start looking at their religious beliefs, their doctrines, and their approaches to moral and social issues? I know this sounds really confusing, but all of this is one of the reasons why the religious left doesn't have capital letters and why the press isn't quite sure what to do with it.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of the religious left. He had mentioned liberal Catholics a moment ago. We'll get into that after this. Here's a new way for you to win the LPR Bundle Package. Submit a time cue with the show number for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. If your selection wins Soundbite of the Week, we'll send you an I Have Issues t-shirt, an Issues Etc. tote bag, notepad, pen, and bumper sticker. Just send your submission for Soundbite of the Week with a time cue and show number to talkback at issuesetc.org, and you could win the LPR Bundle Package. Talkback at issuesetc.org.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc. The Simply Classical curriculum for special needs moves at my child's pace and gives her exactly what she needs. So writes Amber, a homeschooling mother who has joined thousands in homes and schools teaching from this uniquely Christian classical approach to special education. Teach students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome based on ability level rather than chronological age. Use promo code LPR20 today at classicalspecialneeds.com. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. He's senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. So, Terry, you promised a little insight into liberal Catholics, and while you're at it, if you would, a group that gets mentioned almost as infrequently as liberal Catholics, and that is liberal evangelicals.
Okay, let me give listeners something to look for in the next 2 months. We're going to be reading quite a bit about Joe Biden and the absolutely crucial role that his Catholicism plays in his life. And journalists are going to try to come up with an adjective to describe what kind of Catholic he is. It seems devoted Catholic, fervent Catholic, active Catholic. They need an adjective, and what they mean is he talks about his Catholicism a lot, and he has grown up, and he used to be considered a pretty middle-of-the-road Catholic politician in American life. But in the next 2 months, listeners should look for one or two particular political events in the last couple of years and see if these events make it into the profiles of the Catholic faith of Joe Biden. One of those events was when Joe Biden performed a same-sex marriage for two members of the staff of the kind of the extended White House staff during the Barack Obama era. And in fact, Joe Biden embraced same-sex marriage publicly before Obama did. A lot of people said that probably was Biden's support was the trial balloon to see how people reacted, because then Barack Obama would make his decision on when to come out as being in favor of same-sex marriage, which pretty much everybody in Washington known he had been pro-gay rights on every single significant issue for years. But why couldn't, this is a question for you, why couldn't Barack Obama come out earlier as a supporter of gay rights? Why was that politically dangerous?
Well, I mean, he probably didn't know if it could prove a political disaster for himself as the president. And he had yet come up with his explanation that his, I think when he did make a shift, he said his views had evolved or something like that.
Well, but he also had to worry about the black church. And when he ran for president, it was absolutely crucial that he have a massive embrace and turnout from the black church. Just as Barack Obama's support for Biden during the campaign, the virtual campaign we'll see in the next couple of months, his support will be so important in terms of trying to get black voter support. This is also why we're seeing so much attention given to the vice presidential choice of Joe Biden, and that it needs to be an African-American woman to help excite the black voter base on political, in political ways. It was safer to have Joe Biden fly the test balloon because everybody knows that in the cities and in the urban areas and in the newsrooms that matter the most, liberal Catholics are a really, really strong part of that equation. But if you call Biden a liberal Catholic and you say, here's where he's changed his doctrinal beliefs, then you're threatening Biden's ability to help capture the crucial swing vote in American politics, which is actual Sunday morning mass-going Catholics. One of the last true pockets of undecided voters in American life. And they almost always vote for the winning candidate. Their support is crucial. There's no way Trump would have won the presidency without the support of ordinary mass-going Catholics, especially across the Midwest. So they had Joe Biden fly that test balloon. And maybe Biden really had made a strong decision and chose to do that on his own. That's the sort of decision the press doesn't cover all that intently. So in profiles of Biden in the next couple of months, look to see if that gay marriage is mentioned and the fact that it was gently condemned by the hierarchy of the American Catholic Church, including the man who at that point was the president of the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference. Just see if that gets brought up. Also, look and see if they discuss Biden's, not just his votes on abortion issues, but Biden's activity and votes surrounding the attempts to pass a bill that made it illegal to end the life of a child who is accidentally born alive during abortions. See if you can find statements where Biden theologically or politically defines his reasons for casting those votes. That would be another example. And his move on gay rights and his support for the Equality Act would be very important to lots of Catholics and to lots of African-American Christians if they ever saw stories that actually quoted him and explained what he believes and why. So this is all about the adjective that goes in front of the name, the word Catholic. When Joe Biden is a blank Catholic, that's going to be one of the most important journalistic issues in the next 2 months. Your question about evangelical, liberal evangelicals is really crucial as well, because there are some liberal evangelicals. The problem is that lots of them are involved in academia. Lots of them are involved in publishing, and lots of them, quite frankly, don't want to be discussed as doctrinal liberals or people who've changed basic Christian beliefs, because that could be really, really bad for their jobs, their ability to stay unemployed as a part of the evangelical mainstream. If you were looking for one event that really captured the angst on this issue, you would go back in time in Twitter and look at the reactions to the Christianity Today editorial slamming Trump and particularly giving a case for why evangelicals should not even consider voting for Trump. Look to the reactions of that. Also, look at the reactions of a few evangelical social work agencies who attempted to slightly liberalize their policies on gay marriage or medical benefits for gay couples. You look that up and you'll find lots of angst in the press about whether or not it's good to cover liberal evangelicals, because if you cover them, you might get them hurt. As a gay rights activist back in the 80s told me at a Methodist seminary, I said I thought some of their projects were really interested and I wanted to write about them. And this lesbian seminarian said, oh, we don't want you to write about the things we're doing, because if you write about them, the people in the pews will know. So that's part of the equation about the press kind of wants to cheer for these people. But at the same time, if you write about them and then you let the conservatives critique them and you put that in print, it might be bad for these religious leaders that many journalists really admire and consider to be normal, sane, and moderate, as opposed to those capital letter religious right barbarians.
With about a minute here, Terry, you asked the question, can Biden join elite newsroom pros and put religious liberty in scare quotes? Why do you ask that question? About a minute.
Well, because if he talks a lot about what he believes about religious liberty and how he thinks the court should handle religious liberty and what he would like to see done in legislation related to religious liberty, like what executive orders he would immediately release to wipe out the Trump executive orders protecting religious groups in terms of clashes with sexual revolution issues, that might lead to questions among mainstream African-American and Latino church leaders. So once again, the question is, if we cover this, will it help Biden or will it hurt Biden? So don't look, if there are debates, and of course a lot of people think there won't be any debates this time because they're worried about how Biden would fare, and I guess Republicans would also worry about how Trump would fare in debates. But don't look for lots of commentary about religious liberty issues right now, because that's not going to help Biden at all with the swing voters that he needs in black churches, Latino churches, and most importantly, Sunday morning mass-going Catholic voters.
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, our series, The Words of Scripture, continues. We're going to talk about the word blessed in the Old Testament. Pastor Will Wheaton will be our guest.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide Word and Sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that for over 40 years, Lutheran Church Extension Fund has had the humble privilege of supporting Lutheran Church Missouri Synod ministries with low-cost loans and resources? This is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Because of faithful investors like you, we've been able to help church workers, congregations, schools, and organizations. To learn how you can get involved, call 800-843-8233.
Hi, this is Pastor Brian Katchelmeyer of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Los Alamos, New Mexico. Over the next 5 years, Los Alamos National Laboratory is planning to hire thousands of new employees in the areas of science, engineering, security, administration, and construction. If you have both a technical and confessional mind, Los Alamos may be the place for you. I invite you to explore the possibilities on the websites for the town, laboratory, and Redeemer Lutheran Church.